The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Wake up, boys, there's a light at the window.
Bring my gun and a handful of silver. By the sea we will gather for the fight. It's been so many years, so many tears. We have lost once before, now we'll settle the score. When our cannons will roar, revolution!
We are back. And I am trying to get our next guest on the horn here, and for some reason, I don't know if we don't have him quite yet. We're still trying to get connected to him, so I'm going to try and get his number up here.
All right. Now, once again, you're listening to RBN on republicbroadcasting.org. Today is May 15th, 2011, and we have a guest coming up here in just a few minutes. Hopefully, Louise can get the gentleman Skyped in, and I'll get him on a hard line, so...
You go ahead and continue talking to him about what was going on as far as earthquakes and what have you.
Okay, I will do that. But before I do that, I noticed on the RBN website there is a RBN pledge drive, so everybody knows that RBN is a listener-driven network. Obviously, we don't have Coca-Cola, Monsanto, China Mart lining up to give us money to tell the truth. So I don't understand why. Well, it's up to you and I, Lou, to keep it rocking and keep everybody out there listening. Needs to be chipping in. So I'm sure a lot of you are, so please continue to do that. Keep RBN on the air. I think more importantly than keep RBN on the air and keep the situation static is we need to actually reach out and expand and quit preaching to the choir so much and do things like Lee does, do things like George do, and actually get out in public, bring in some new listeners, bring in some fresh blood, fresh ideas, and start educating people that need to be educated. I personally find every time I talk to somebody, I have more and more trouble finding people that disagree with what we are doing. But the problem is, I think a lot of people in the Patriot Movement, once again, go about it the wrong way. They get fanatical about it. They start hollering and raising their voice, and people in restaurants and public places start looking around saying, who's getting so wound up and raising their voice? And then that makes the people you're talking to uncomfortable. So just try to work your way into just a normal conversation. And personally, what I like doing is weaving the truth information in with just normal conversation, whether it's about sports, weather, what have you. Just weave it in and out. Don't just get on one subject with that fire hose and open it up and just drive people's brains, you know, go through their mouth and drive their brains out their ears. You know, that's just not the approach that we need. We need to just gently just try to gently wake them out of their slumber, I guess is a good way to put it, because I've seen both tactics, and I know people that just open up the fire hose, and, man, people just freak out, and I see what people are talking about. All the time you hear callers call into shows and say people look at me like they're wide-eyed and like I'm a freak. It's like, well, you might want to look at yourself in a mirror when you're trying to... do your little spiel and just see what they're seeing. It might not be them. It might be you. You might want to just tone down your message and ask questions. Draw the information out of them. I believe it's called Socratic teaching method, where you actually ask questions and drive them to the conclusion that you're after. And once again, most people know that we have a lot of issues going on in our world. They just don't know all the gory details that you need, that you know. And quite honestly, they don't need to know all the gory details in 5 minutes. They're better off just gently going into a topic of their choice and then just ask them questions. One of the questions you can ask them is why is every country in the world in debt? You know, how can that be? You would think that countries, governments are lending each other money. But that opens up the whole ball of wax with the central banks and the banksters that are controlling all the countries.
Yeah, we got our guest on, hopefully.
All right. So we're still working on the guest, but we'll be back in 3 minutes. Listen to RBN. Call in numbers 800-313-3811. 800-313-9443.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medication. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this ExtendoVite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny? And that the banks know this and hope you don't find out. Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Horses and men, horses and men are on the field. They didn't yield, many have fallen here. Never forget, never forget what they have done. The time will come when it will change again.
We are back. And we have our guest, who I am so proud to have on, Patrick Gorman. Okay, I don't know how many people who know him. He is an actor, and for a couple of stints in my life, I mostly did back set work, or just what I want to call extra work, and makeup and things like that. But recently, most people may know him because of the Civil War reenactment, Gettysburg, Gods and Generals. So, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure. Now, we're on Skype here, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We're on Skype.
Can you actually see me or not?
Well, I can't see you. I can see your picture on there.
And you have thousands of listeners listen to your Skype conversation worldwide. Patrick, by the way, my name is Tom. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm
Tom
doing
is
fine.
My Ed McMahon.
Yes, of course.
I'm probably half of Ed. I'm probably half the weight of Ed. I'm a half
it's
Ed.
Not, it's not the Ed. Weight of Ed. Okay.
Well, it's certainly an honor to have you interview me here on your show. It's fantastic.
You get to listen to people all over the place who's listening to you right now. Let's go over a little bit about yourself. Just start off with the beginning.
Sure. You know, I would probably say in the beginning here, although they used to hear me talk a little bit like this, all y'all know General Hood speaks a little bit like this, but I have to go into that because, of course, that was for General Hood. I was actually born in California, so I'm like half a Yankee and not quite half a Reb. I grew up, my grandmother came from Virginia in the 1870s and on a covered wagon all the way to California. And one of her favorite stories was about her, she always said her mother's favorite story really was about when they lived in Georgia and Sherman's troops were coming, they had to hide in the cellar. And after a few hours, they came up out of the cellar door and their whole home was burned around them. And that was her favorite story. She told that story, I think, a million times. And so I have roots on both sides of the Civil War. I grew up playing with a Union officer's infantry sword. I used to play Three Musketeers with it. Horror, horror, I think. I didn't know what I was doing. And I had another grandfather's 36 caliber Colt pistol with a CSA carved in the grip. And that was my cowboy gun. And it's just so tragic in a way. It's not tragic, but it's very sad that you grew up with artifacts like that. I after I left home, was gone for so many years. When I came back, all those things had kind of disappeared. But so I've always been interested in, of course, in Civil War history. But I'm an amateur historian. Actors kind of have to be that because you never know what period of time you're going to be asked to play in or what kind of character. So history is like an ongoing preoccupation. And I really came to history through the movies. I remember being a little kid and going to see Robin Hood with Errol Flynn. And then I came home with all these questions from my mom and dad. Was there a real Robin Hood? And was there a real King Richard and the sheriff of Nottingham? And they all threw up their hands and said, well, we don't know. Go to the library and find out. And that's so the movies really brought me to history. But there was all this talk of, you know, I don't know why I'm stuck on my grandmother. You want to maybe hear about me, but I have a picture of my grandmother mounted side saddle in a long dress and a lovely hat with a feather. And it's dated 1931. She's riding side saddle. And what my grandmother did, now they had cars in the small town I grew up in, but she would get jacked saddled, side saddle, get all dressed up, and she would ride to town on horseback, order her supplies, and have them set out to the house. And I thought, 1931. I mean, for me, that's not that far. That's not that long ago, even though it is a long time ago.
The problem is that we don't want to tell everybody how old we are.
No, but you're kind of getting a hint here. When I played General Hood, I was already practically twice his age.
But you sure look good.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm looking at your photos on your website, and is your website patgorman.com?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, you don't look that old. So whatever you're doing it right.
It's useful and it's not useful. I This month, I just, no, well, last month, I had a beginning of a beard, because for a film where they wanted me to have a beard. And in the meantime, I got a commercial audition, and was playing Poseidon, the god of the sea. And they made me shave my beard, and then they put a false beard, a mustache, and a long wig and everything. So I go up and down. I look, one minute I look 100 years old, the next minute I look, I think I can probably pass for 65 anyway. But it's
absolutely, you can pass for 65. Actually, a little before that, I would say.
I'd say 50.
Well, maybe in the picture, not really. See, we should, we should have the Skype so you should, you could actually see. But you know, people say, well, how do you do that? And I always say, well, just stay hungry. That's about the only answer I can give. I guess it comes from my jeans.
I don't wear jeans.
It looks like to me you have your fingers in a lot of different things, including the music industry. So it looks like you're on a concert tour.
Well, no, I'm not on a concert tour now. I did tour with Judy Garland. Maybe you want to talk about aging yourself.
Wow.
I toured with Judy Garland. I played the Palace Theater. I was in her nightclub act. We played Vegas and Dallas and Detroit. And I worked with her for about 2 years. I grew up in a rural town in California called Vicente. It was a small town then. But my mother had been a professional dancer, and she and my father had retreated to that small town during the Depression because it was tough and there were a lot of other reasons. So I was born in Vicente, but I spent time in Hollywood and Los Angeles all growing up. And so I was a dancer. I tap dance. I started out. My first role as an actor was as Geppetto in Pinocchio in a children's production. I had a little white wig and octagonal shaped glasses and a mustache, and we had lines and sang songs and danced, and it was a full production on stage. And I remember standing on stage. It was about a 350 seat theater, and I remember the lights hitting me in the eyes, and I couldn't see the audience, but I could feel them, and that was I knew that they were waiting for me to do something, and that was a powerful feeling for a 4 year old, and I knew from that point on that's what I wanted to do.
You were addicted at that point, huh?
I was addicted, but so yes, go ahead.
There's something about you and I kind of border, because I started doing stuff when I was about 7. My mother was a rockette.
Oh, yes.
A dancer. So, you know, when you've grown up in that life, so to speak.
It lends itself to it. And even being in a small town, you know, where only sissies tap danced, and I had to fight my way through my childhood. After my, I cannot tell you the number of times. I think that's the reason I eventually went into martial arts.
Wow.
I beat up so much as a little kid. And, it was terrible. I mean, I used to have to, until I got into high school where I didn't tell anybody I was tap dancing or dancing. And I got on the track team. I was the captain of the track team. And then when I tap danced in a school program, everybody thought that was cool. But growing up was not. That was not fun. It was fun. The dancing was fun, but that aspect of being teased all the time.
Well, Patrick, a lot of people may not realize this, but martial arts and tap dancing and ballet, they're all very similar. It's a martial arts is extremely, you know, like you're saying, coordination is just extremely powerful.
Well, I had, you know, by the time I was 16, I had 3 dance schools. I mean, I taught in, I had one with my mother and 2 of my own. And I went back and forth to Hollywood to train. And they said, well, you should be here in the movies. What are you doing? You know, and I, of course, I wanted to be in, and I've been in plays in all my childhood.
We got music. We got a break coming up.
Okay.
Guys, we're talking to one of my favorite guys, Patrick Foreman. I'm so happy to have him on the program, and we will be right back.
heard? Proactiv is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv, your acne can heal, and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-489-0192. Because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv risk-free and also receive our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free if you call right now. You heard it. Be one of the first to try Better Than Ever Proactiv Solution. You'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial, plus a free refining mask and green tea moisturizer. Call 1-800-489-0192. This is our best radio offer. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv, plus two free extras. Go to GetProactiv.com or call 1-800-489-0192. That's 1-800-489-0192.
What really gets in the way of your goals and dreams? Time? Money? Education? Well, if it's all of the above, Ashworth College is for you. Ashworth can help you achieve your goals by letting you study at your own pace, online, anywhere, anytime. Your computer is your classroom. With programs as low as $39 a month, Ashworth College is one of the most affordable online schools out there. Just $39 a month. Plus, Ashworth offers over 100 nationally accredited college programs, such as criminal justice, healthcare, technology, and business. You could earn as much as $300,000 more than those without an associate's degree. No high school diploma? Well, Ashworth even offers high school completion programs. So call an Ashworth Career Advisor right now, toll free at 1-866-504-8173. That's 1-866-504-8173. Or go to ashworthtraining.com.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
They burned the Constitution. It doesn't mean anything today. We live in a mental institution.
We are coming back because we don't have enough time to talk to poor Patrick because I want to talk to him a lot. Anyway, on the break, I'm so glad you're on our show. On the break, one thing we were talking about is that you were doing a Pop Speckett. He was going to talk about NASCAR.
Oh, yeah, the film called Short Track, where I was the redneck patriarch of a NASCAR racing family. We filmed in North Carolina. It was a lot of fun. It's a low-budget film that came out a couple of years ago. It didn't get a lot. It was on distribution. You can rent it. But you should get my website. Is www.patrickgormanonline.com. That's Patrick Gorman Online, all one word. We had another Patrick Gorman.
Yeah, and
yeah,
I
because
screwed
I
up.
Didn't know what he was talking about.
I screwed up all ago, and I gave the wrong website out, and I was interviewing the totally different person. but this is much better because you're a fellow racer like myself, but you're not. You just play one on TV.
Well, not on TV. It was a feature film.
All right. Well, very good.
But my career, I started as a kid. When I left Los Angeles to actually go into film, I ended up, I've done practically everything from being a circus clown to playing Shakespeare. After my tour of the military service, I was in France. I studied acting in France, although I had already been acting, and I my first job there was as a circus clown because I didn't speak French, and I played in France for and lived there in Paris for about 6 years.
And I wasn't allowed to go in there. My grandmother wouldn't let me go. I was a year in Alsace-Lorraine, actually, and I was not allowed to go into Paris because she was unsure they were wild.
Well, it was a great time in my life. So I came back to the United States. I got into the New York Shakespeare Festival, and I toured around the country. I didn't tour. I was actually in several repertory companies, Actors Theater Louisville, Seattle Rep, and ACT in San Francisco. And then I got into film, although I've been in SAG for over 50 years. I vote for the Oscars. I'm just not famous. But my reenactor friends, you know, I have to say the reenactors, you know, incredible people that I've met from the film Gettysburg. You know, I owe them a lot, a great debt. Of course, the film couldn't have been done without their contribution anyway. I mean, of course, Ron Maxwell having that story, Killer Angels, for 18 years, mm-hmm. trying to get it done. And then Ted Turner making it possible. But without the reenactors, it wouldn't have happened.
So now what you're referring to is the Civil War reenactors?
The Civil War reenactors, yes. And, you know, I got there to the, we had a big table read for the film before we started. And I didn't start filming right away. And so I got out on my, I went to the Wranglers, got myself a good horse, made sure I had a good horse. I went out and practiced my riding with the spurs and the sword. And I would ride around, and I'd ride into the reenactor camps and in character. And they invited me in, and I'd sit down and have a beer and a cigar or some wine or something, and we'd talk and maybe a little good whiskey there, too. I do like that with my cigars.
We won't tell you anything about that. No, go ahead.
What happened was I did all the research. I'd read everything that I could lay my hands on about Hood. But I got so much from the reenactors. I got lots of anecdotal things, and I got a feeling of the atmosphere. You know, the camps were kept pristine and as much historically accurate as possible. And they just, by the time I had to go in front of the camera, I felt very much at home with in General Hood's skin. And so I felt I owed them really a debt of gratitude. And then, of course, I got invited to these reenactments, which was, it was an honor to be in these films. And it was an honor to participate in these reenactments. And I had a great time. But I suddenly realized, well, General Hood is a celebrity. Now, you know, I'm a journeyman actor, and I've been around famous people my whole life, but I haven't been famous. But I remember going into a porta potty at the first reenactment that I went to, and I came out of the porta potty, and there was a line about 200 yards long of people who wanted my autograph. Now, that was unbelievable.
That's bad. Okay.
So now let me ask a question. Were they wanting your autograph, or they were waiting to get in the porta potty?
That's what I was going to say.
You know, that's a good question, but actually, it actually wanted the autograph.
Well, you know, no one knows what it's like unless you live it.
Yes.
And, you know, everybody, I've never wanted to be a personality per se, as far as an actor. I always said there's two kinds of actors. There mm-hmm. are good actors and people who want to be stars. There are two different things. You know what I'm talking about, okay?
Yes. Of course, but you know there are some, you know, some of the great stars and some of the people that that I admire. You know, be a celebrity is a profession in itself, and it's really tough. I think if that had happened to me when I was younger, I don't know how well I would have handled it. I think I'm ready now, but I mean, it's not likely to happen. But that's why it's so nice I mean, I couldn't believe. I did a short film in Pennsylvania, and I played a biker ghost. And I didn't take a camera with me. So when we got back from location in Pennsylvania, I contacted the people. I said, all young people in the cast and crew, and I said, well, do you have any pictures? I didn't get any pictures from the shoot. They said, oh, we're going to put it on Facebook, and you can see them there. And I said, face what? And,
yeah.
And so I finally got on Facebook, and lo and behold, as soon as I got on, I start getting friend requests from reenactors. And not just a few. I mean, on one week, I had over 100. And to this day, I still get anywhere from 20 or 30 requests. And I'm so far, I'm about 700 people behind in answering. I try and answer them all. But this was totally unexpected. I had no idea. And it's really, I'm honored to be recognized and have that support. But that's our age where everything is on, on the internet. And it's very gratifying for me because a German actor, as you know, you don't get recognized very much.
Well, you're a big shot, and it looks like, if I'm reading your website right, the name of that movie is King of the Road, which is coming out in Paramount Studios in October.
Well, that King of the Road is another King of the Road. That's not the King of the Road I did has already been released.
Well, now that's the one where you're a biker ghost, and then a narrator is what it says on your website.
Yeah, that's right. It's already been released. I need to update that. That entry is probably a couple of years old.
Oh, wow. Okay. So now you played another biker ghost in a second movie? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's another film with that title. In fact, there's a film out called The Last Full Measure, but it's not the last
film. Not the one. Yeah.
What about Panhead McCoy? That's the one you're referring to then.
Yeah, that Panhead McCoy is from King of the Road. And that's where he's the biker ghost. There's some on YouTube. There are some scenes from that, I think, too. But one of the things that I've just finished doing, I was one of the judges on the Student Academy Awards. As I said, I'm a member of the Motion Picture Academy. I was invited to join back in 1985. And every year since then, I've been on the Foreign Film Committee, which is the judges films for the Academy, the Oscar for Foreign Film. And that's one of my favorite things. But this year, I also did the judging for the Student Academy Awards. And it's really, it's wonderful. It's also kind of an honor to do that. But the films that the young people are making are quite extraordinary, and I've been in some student films. In fact, the King of the Road film was a USC thesis film, and the reason I did it was because the part was so good, and I liked the script, and I wanted to be able to help the filmmaker out, and they often get professional actors to do that, and so I've done quite a few of those in the past, and also AFI films. My idea as an actor, 90% of the time, or 95% of the time, is spent looking for work, trying to develop contacts. And that's why that thing that I always am requesting my Civil War fans and friends to go on the International Movie Database, the IMDb, and hit on the films, the Civil War films that they like. And of course, I'm always saying the ones that I'm in, Gettysburg and Gods and Generals. And also, while you're at it, hit on old General Hood, because that increases my rating as an actor.
Right,
but,
right.
That's why I always get, because it's important to show that there is an interest and a high interest in those films. Because they're difficult to do. You're going to have to jump in and ask me questions because I think I'm rambling like
I think a lot of listeners are interested in your Civil War film. So if you could elaborate on some of those, and
we've had a lot of reenactors. In fact, I talked to a group of reenactors down in southern Missouri that are reacting right now, and they wanted so much to be able to call into you, and they weren't able to because they're in the midst of the reenactment at the time that you'd be on the air.
Yes.
But they were so excited that you were going to be on RBN, and a lot of the guys who listen to the show who have been, you know, out there contacting and rating you and doing those things, is, you know, they get your emails and updates. So I've got tons of reenactors.
And I think one of the more important things for RBN listeners is part of what these reenactors do is they do a public outreach where they actually go and educate the public, whether it's school or other venues of the real history of the Civil War. So maybe you could speak towards that. So.
Yes.
Back to you, Patrick.
As a kid, being introduced to history through the films, they have this opportunity of contacting school age, you know, kids from little kids to high school with, you know, the living history. With the reenactments, of course, there are the people who do the living history. It's such a great opportunity because they'll be able to stir interest that you're not going to get necessarily from a history book. You know, history classes, as I remember, were not that exciting. I liked history, and I was interested in it myself, but I remember my history classes were not the most exciting classes. And I noticed from kids today that I meet, they're interested in now. But when you go to a reenactment or they come to the school and whatever presentation they give, it is so, for me, that's the most important thing. Of course, the big battles that they reenact, and that for me to go and mount up and ride around and salute people as General Hood and lead the troops into battle, what fun. But the real value of that is for the public, is for the young people, because it's so invaluable. I can't say enough about it. And
the typical public education system today is kind of a whitewash of our history. They don't want you to really understand where our country was founded and why it was founded and the principles that we stand upon, and they're kind of whitewashing that. So it's so important what you guys are doing.
Well, you know, I'm not a reenactor, and when I go to a reenactment, I'm always invited by them. And, you know, my expenses are paid and that kind of thing. I'm a guest, and I never take over the troops. You know, I'm there as a figurehead, and I always am under the commander of the event and at his pleasure, at their pleasure. Yes, it is. There's this whole political correctness thing. I mean, the fact that in the South, where they want to ban the Stars and Bars and all this kind of thing, it's appalling to me, you know, because I'm not a Southerner, but that's part of my heritage, and it's part of my heritage. This, the whole thing about reenacting for me and being able to do this is to enlighten people and to examine our history. And, as you know, it's about heritage, not about hate. It's not about... This is so ridiculous to ban the state flags and that kind of thing. I do understand it in a way, but it's not correct.
Actually, I worked a lot, Patrick, with African-American groups and what have you, and also many of the, Southern groups, of changing, putting a quotation at the bottom of any flags or whatever else that stands for a sovereignty, not for slavery. One of the biggest things first of all, you agree with me that no man ever had a right to own another man. And that was not the reason, the real reason for people pushing for a sovereign being, where government did not infringe on the rights of average citizens. Okay? Would you agree?
Well, Yes. Going back to what the function of this, the reenactors and this kind of movement, I think is to explore
history. Yeah.
Explore history and the attitudes of the time. Mm-hmm. You see, we so many people who are interested in the Civil War or were not interested in it, particularly, or who have a judgment about it, have no idea of the attitude of the people of the time. We don't think of that. As I said, you know, I spent 8.5 years in the military. I served the United States of America. I didn't serve the sovereign state of California, or, you know, that was not the point. And I would certainly not consider secession as a good idea. That being said, that this is now, and that was then. And we have to study and examine the attitudes and the beliefs of the people of the time. And that's very difficult. And we have to separate that from our own particular prejudices or lack of prejudice. You know, I used to have, originally my argument with the reenactors was, well, yes, it's state rights, but one of the states' rights is the right to own slaves. But that's a simplification. The whole thing, it's a complicated, the issues of the Civil War have not been resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
these movements are to understand this without getting into all that politics. But yes, I think it's so
important. The North owned slaves also. I was born in New York, so I'm a Northerner. But the New York, you know, people in New York owned slaves. It wasn't just the South. And after, you know, with abolition and what have you, blacks were segregated to communities where they couldn't get employment. You know, it didn't stop. After the Civil War, it didn't stop. You know, there was a civil rights movement. I was fairly active in that. I think it had to do with being a Jew. I'm sorry. No, it's a joke, but it didn't appear.
If anyone knows about prejudice, of course, the Jewish people have to know about that. I mean, of course they know.
I think the difference between, I think the thing between difference between Jews and African Americans, blacks, whatever, or other races, Jews could mix. You know, many Jews were very fair-haired, or they're regular, so to speak. So they could mix. They could change themselves in some way to mix, to blend in, if you would. Change names so they didn't have the persona of being Jews. And I think that is... And there is an actual problem, because I know my mother... my father was Jewish. My mother always liked to change the name so that no one actually knew what it was. Okay?
Yeah.
Because she didn't want anyone to know we were Jews. And I never was ashamed of being a Jew. And
well,
I think...
Of course, that's the real issue is, it has to do with prejudice, because I know my great-grandfather came from Ireland, was named O'Gorman, and they dropped the O because when he came, there was a tremendous prejudice against the poor Irish. So the whole idea of prejudice anyway is whatever form or shape it takes is what we have to be concerned with. It is a concern, and it's the responsibility of artists, I think. I've always taken it as a responsibility. Being an artist is a responsibility. It's not a entitlement. And one of the major issues is prejudice of any sort. It's ridiculous. When we think of our own frailties, how dare anyone think they're better than anyone else? I mean, it's just on whatever level. I mean, we've all done stupid things. We've all done things we're not proud of. And this needs to be explored. And of course, that's all the issue of the Civil War, the fact that people now, still, that so many of the people in the South are still, you know, outraged about the policies of Lincoln and the things that Sherman and Sheridan. But, you know, that's the past, but it's to be studied and not to be, not to set us apart. It's not forgotten. And that's the other thing. We can't, you know, banning the history, historical artifacts, this is nonsense. And anyway, I'm not really a political person, but prejudice has always, you know, as I started out saying, as a little kid, I experienced it being someone who liked to dance. That was not accepted in my general, you know, you're a sissy, you're not a manly person if you dance in that mm-hmm. in that environment. So that's, you know, that's down at the bottom. but that's still a kind of prejudice. And so I felt that in, and I don't claim it's anything like being the prejudice that the Jewish people and
I never really, only for a short time actually, I didn't really have that prejudice growing up. I you know, we were military, and we landed in San Diego because my father was Navy. One of my fathers was Navy, and because my father had passed away when I was about four. So, but basically, you know, in California, I really didn't have the prejudice except at a certain time. I remember working at there was a bit during the 60s and 70s right in that little spot, and I'd be doing films. You know, you'd be on a set. In fact, on the set of MASH, when we did locations, you'd have people show up, and it was an era of the time of the skinheads. Mm-hmm. And they started showing up and yelling obscenities to Jews. And you know, everybody was a Jew, and they were doing this, and blah, 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 blah. And constantly, and I'm a little blonde next door, you know, I don't look like the typical, stereotypical, you know, mm-hmm. Jewish person. So, you know, I'm sitting there, and they're yelling at us, you know, Aryan blood, Aryan blood, Aryan blood, you know. And I'm looking at you, man, don't you know the difference? Okay, see, and the point is, everyone assumes you can't go by the way someone looks to decide who they are. Okay, Patrick, if I look at you, I know you have your Irish as far as background, but I could pinpoint you as French. Okay, very easily. You spend some time in France, you know what I'm talking about. You have many of the characteristics of a certain province in France, close to Alsace-Lorraine. Okay.
Yes.
So it's so easy because it's on that border between France and Germany. The people there are looking one way. If you go to the south of France, it's another. If you go to the north of France, it's another. The same thing if you go to England, Ireland, Wales, Scotland. Okay. If you're going to go to the Middle East, it's no difference. There are many people who are Indian blood, who had been adopted and what have you, and in our country thought that they were African American. And after a DNA test, you know, they found out, wait a minute, they're Indian. And they never knew. But their mindset changed from when they were Indian to being black. I remember a gentleman talking about that.
Well, you know, all that is so true, and why race ever becomes, it's just ridiculous. On my mother's side of the family, they came back with the Pilgrims. One of my grandmothers of that time, now get this, she married an English Jewish rabbi of that time. Did they even know that there were any Jews in Plymouth in that area?
Yes.
See, you know, so that's in my background. My great grandfather came from Ireland. He married a Cherokee, a full blooded Cherokee Indian woman. So I'm all mixed up, and we're all mixed up. That's
right.
Point. It doesn't matter. None of that stuff. It matters only in that it affects us in certain ways. But as far as making one of us better or than the other, or it's just ignorance. It's just ignorance to have any kind of prejudice at all. And we have to become aware of that. I mean, of course, we could go on and on about this, and many people do. But I think that we have to stop that wherever it is. I must say I do will speak out when I hear that. And you know, you're saying about the Jewish prejudice. It depends on where you are. Mm-hmm. It depends on, you know, in the military, it's pretty. I experienced the military when I had a black company commander. But of course, there were people in the military who were very anti-black, and but still accepted. I mean, we were equals. But there were people who didn't have that attitude.
Hold on, we're getting a break coming up here. Sure. Hold on, Patrick. We'll be right back. This is Capital Forum. We have a wonderful guest, Patrick Gorman.
The supremacy of international commerce, thus avoiding and undermining local, state, and national sovereignty.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
This is your call to action, America. It's time to get prepared. Food prices, fuel prices, dollar collapse, earthquakes, tornadoes, nuclear meltdown. Where's your plan? Get one at the Get Prepared Expo in Springfield, Missouri, May 14th and 15th, downtown at the Expo Center. Learn about survival economics, gold, silver, emergency food, water filtration, solar and wind power, heirloom seeds and gardening, how to prepare and defend your home, and hear from John Moore as he speaks about global warming and what the government isn't telling you, and John Stadtmiller with what is in store for you. Plus, meet the 2012 candidate for President of the United States, and Sheriff Richard Mack and Larry Pratt. All this and much more at the Get Prepared Expo, May 14th and 15th in Springfield, Missouri, for the low admission price of only $7. Get details now at GetPreparedExpo.com. That's GetPreparedExpo.com. What happens next is up to you. GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
I wouldn't really have time. Patrick, go ahead and real quick go over.
Well, I just wanted to say that we were having a little speaker problem here, and I'm computer challenged. I can barely manage here. I'm much more comfortable on horseback than I am with an iPad or a computer. But, yes, the one thing I'd like to mention to people, especially the Civil War reenactors, I addressing them mostly, this thing about the IMDb, which I annoy people with, but it really even though it is, as I say, outrageous self-promotion because it increases my rating, if you go and check on, hit on these films, and voting and hitting on them are different things, but it increases the ratings. These ratings actually affect casting decisions. The better rating I have, the better chance I have to be considered for a certain kind of part. I mean, that's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. But it helps show that there is an interest in these films, and there are enough reenactors that if they go in and once a week hit on all the Civil War films that they've ever loved. And of course, I say especially Gettysburg and Gods and Generals because I was in those, and that rating helps me because it's difficult to get these films made. Now we've got right now there are two films. There are more. One is called a series, Two Appomattox, which focuses on Grant, but all of Grant's career. It's a 10-part series, and I'm in touch with one of the writer producers. I haven't met him yet, but what he is planning to do and his point of view is I'm very, very much impressed with the whole structure and the whole goal of what he wants to do. And the other one is Lincoln, Spielberg's Lincoln, which is in preparation. And I understand there's a film in preparation about Claiborne. So the idea that we go in and click on the IMDb, go in for 5 minutes and click on those films, click on the different roles, what it does is show an interest in those films for the finance, for the people financing films. And I don't want to dwell on that because it's a minor thing. We don't know how much impact. But I do know that the IMDb is checked. People go on. Whenever I meet an actor or someone in the business, I immediately go on the IMDb and see what they've done, what their background is. It's just a normal thing. So I think... I don't know what else we have to talk about. I was thinking of one thing that I've never talked about, and I'm going to bring it up now. Maybe we have a moment. It's completely off the. There's in Gettysburg, the film. There's a scene where the troops are surrounding General Lee, played by Martin Sheen. It was a very moving moment, and I want to talk about it because. A lot of people, reenactors, everyone has their idea of General Lee. And a lot of people, well, they prefer Duvall's Lee to Martin Sheen and all that. And, of course, Martin Sheen got the role at the last minute. I think he did a wonderful job. But one of the things that happened, and this happened spontaneously, and luckily Ron Maxwell got a camera going. Because there was a moment between setups when they were going to do Pickett's Charge. And Martin Sheen came out on horseback and he was riding through the reenactors to get to the mark where he was going to be. And they started chanting, Lee, Lee. And everyone was crowding around. Now, this was not a stage scene. This happened spontaneously amongst the reenactors and Martin Sheen. And they were...